Morning. Today's daf in Bava Metzia is Kuf Dalad. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long as Zechon Nishmas Libegar Vela Bashmuel. We are finishing the eighth parak of the Masechta. We are in Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. We are one mission away from finishing up. Hamasker Bais Chaveiro. So you rent out a house to your friend. Benafel, and the house falls down. Chayev Lami Labayis. So you have to put up a new house for him. In other words, you are required to give him a house, provide him a house. That was the lease agreement. And so the lease agreement says that you're going to provide him a house, so you got to give him another house. So Hayakatan lo yasen gadol. Now, in terms of the replacement house, so if it was a small house, so you don't make it big. Gadol lo yasen katan. If it was big, don't make it small. Echad lo yasen shtaim. If it was one, don't make it two. And shtaim lo yasen echad. If it's two, don't make it one. Lo yivchos menachalonos. You shouldn't detract from any of the windows. Or lo yosef aleim. And you shouldn't add to any of the windows elamidash name unless they both parties are in agreement. Okay, so basically what we learned together in this last mishnah on the eighth parak is that if there's any type of lease agreement that exists between an owner and its tenant, and the owner is required to provide a new house for the tenant, so basically as is, same way that the previous house was, that's the way the new house is going to have to go up. Now hechidam, the gemara says, now exactly what are we talking about over here? Damale by zeh. So if the terms of the lease agreement is I'm renting you this house with a specific indication that was specifically this house, so nafal azolei. So once the house falls down, so that's it, meaning the rental now is over. Because in the rental agreement, it was the terms of the agreement was I'm going to rent you this particular house. And what can I tell you? It's just bad mazel. So idam alei baitstam. So... and if I just simply said that I'm going to rent you a house, but without being specific about which particular house, echad, amai lo yasen ashtayim, katan amai lo yasen agadol. So then I don't understand. So why, what's the big deal about changing some of the dimensions of the house? If it's one, not make it a duo. If it's small, why not make it big? In other words, there was no clear indication that there was going to be any dimensions to the house. So I'm Reish Lakish to Amalei Baishani Maskelacha Midas Arko Kach V'Kach. So Reish Lakish says, here's the point of the Mishnah. The point of the Mishnah is that the owner said to the tenant, I'm going to rent you a house. Not this house, because again, once it's this house, so then the house goes down, the rental's over. But I'm going to rent you a house. But with these dimensions. So in other words, he's pointing now to the dimensions of this particular house that was being rented. So it's a little bit of a hybrid in terms of the rental agreement. Not specifically this house, but the dimensions of this house. So the Gemara says, now, if that's the specific details of this particular rental, so then there's not much of a chiddush. So the Gemara says, Eliki Asa Ravina Meir Shlakish Damalei Bayis Kaze Ani Maskelach. So the Gemara says, okay, so in the rental agreement is the owner said, I'm going to rent you a house like this. So this will be a model of what I'm going to rent you. So the Gemara says, Vakati Mala Member. So the Gemara says, okay. But again, in the lease agreement, it didn't say this particular house. It said, Kaze, it's going to be like this house. So once again, pretty much we have the Chiddush down, and it doesn't seem like we need a Mishnah to teach us anything. Because once I given now the model of which the house is going to look like, and the house goes down, so I have to provide for you something that looks very similar to this. And again, where's the Chiddush in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, L'tricha d'gai gudu d'nahar. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what the Chiddush in the Mishnah is. Location. Let's say that the house is located right now by the riverbank. So you got beachfront property. Or something like that. So ma'u detema mai kazeh dekaya gudanara. Now, when you say the kazeh, you're not only talking about the dimensions of the model of the house, but you're also talking about the location and the view. Beautiful beachfront view. You get to look at the river. And the Gemara says, Kamash Malan. That's the Chiddush. Chiddush is that when you say kazeh, you're only talking about the house. You're not talking about the location. And that is, in fact, a Chiddush. Hajran l'chashowel. And that is the end of the eighth parak of the Masechta. Okay. We start now the ninth parak of Bava Metzia. And in so doing, we're going to be talking about sharecropping and sharecropping. Now, two kinds of sharecropping. So in English, I don't know how to make a difference between the two. But in the Mishnayos, you'll see, clearly there's going to be a distinction between the two. And one is called Arisus. Arisus also goes by the name of Kablanos. But it's a little bit confusing because Kablanos also refers to just basic contract work. So, but when referring to working a field, so Arisus is a term that I guess we're generally more comfortable with. But you'll see the Mishnah use the word Kablanos, so that's a good... That's a good warning, just to look for the word kablanos in this regard. And that basically means we're sharecropping, meaning I'm going to work your field and we're going to yield its produce and we're going to divide it on a percentage basis. I'll take a percentage, you take a percentage. How much is that percentage going to be? Menag ha'makom. So various menagim have different appropriations in terms of how much percentage I'm going to take versus you're going to take. And so that is arisus. And then there's chakiras or chachiras. And that is where basically I'm going to be, again, working your property and I'm going to give you a fixed amount. And anything above and beyond that is going to go to me. Okay, so basically it's more of a classic rental where I'm making usage of your property, I'm giving you a fixed amount, and then I'll take whatever more I can take. Obviously, it's each one has its pluses, its minuses, right? You know when you're an aris, so you know that your profit is going to be no greater than that of the owner of the property. Where you're a chocher, where it's a basic rental agreement, so you really could, your profit margin can be much greater because it's only a fixed amount that you're giving to the owner. Anyway, the key over here in our Mishnayos is to always identify whether the Mishnah is talking about an aris, a chocher, or both. Okay, and just to give away a little bit of the Gemara coming up ahead, we'll hopefully see this Gemara later on this morning, and that is that the first two Mishnayos of our Masechta, which are both coming up on today, really yesterday's daf, the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah, are talking about both an Aris and a Chocher, with maybe a little bit of exception, but Mishnayos 1 and 2 are talking about both, and from that point going forward, so then you have to, then it's either one or the other. And of course, we're going to have to then identify which one it is. And every time we get to a Mishnah, Rashi tips his cap in terms of which one it's going to be, whether it's a Chocher or whether it's an Aris. Okay, so that's a basic introduction. Let's begin the Mishnayos. We are on the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, starting now the ninth parak of the Masechta. Mekabel Sado Mechavero. So you accept to work your friend's field. So makom shenagu likso yikso lako yakor. So in terms of various menhagim, you follow minhag makom. So if we're talking about just a simple harvesting where I'm cutting the grain, so you have to cut the grain. And if the minhag is to be ma'akir, to really uproot it from the ground, so then you uproot it. But you have to follow the minhag, and you cannot deviate from the minhag. And the Gemara is going to advance arguments in terms of why it is that you cannot deviate from the minhag. And we're going to talk about from both the perspective of the owner and from the worker as well. Lacharosh acharav yacharosh. And let's say there's a minhag to plow afterwards. Why would I want to plow after I harvested? So Rashi points out that you want to plow afterwards in order to basically uproot everything, and so that there be no old growth. Right? Look at the Rashi in the Mishnah. Last Rashi in the Amud. Acher ksira o ha'akira. After I'm either harvesting through cutting or harvesting through uprooting, I'm going to plow. Kidei lahafoch sharashim. Shel asavim raim. Basically, it's a form of weeding. Weeding after you harvested. Shebo v'yamusa v'lo yachzu v'yitzmechu lecheshet tizra. Okay, because I don't want them to come up again. So therefore, I'm going to plow after I harvest. If that's the minhag, so then you have to follow the minhag. And the Mishnah tells us, as if we didn't fully understand, Hakol k'minhag medina. Everything follows the minhag. So you are the sharecropper, you are the choker, you're working, so you have to follow the minhag. K'shem shecholkim b'tvua, kacholkim b'tevin uvekash. Now, there will be a division of tvuah, of the grain, meaning this clearly is talking about a sharecropper. And as I mentioned, Mishnah 1 and 2 are talking about both primarily, fundamentally, but this line of the Mishnah pretty much is talking about the sharecropper. So this is a little bit of an exception to that, to the basic rule that I laid out. Just like you divide by the grain, so too you're going to be dividing the tevin, the kash, you're also going to be dividing the stalks, the straw. Right, tevin and kash are two different parts of the straw. But anyway, you're going to be dividing that as well. So that could be used for fodder for the animals. It could be used to make mortar, to make bricks. So that it's just as much of an asset as the actual grain itself. And when you're sharecropping, so that gets divided along the same percentage as the grain. And kishem shecholkim b'yayin, kacholkim b'zmuros u'vekanim. And when you are sharecropping in a vineyard, so obviously the grapes are going to get divided between owner and worker, and so are the vines, and so are the kanim. Now, the kanim are the posts. In other words, when you're making a vine, so you need to stick poles in the ground so that the vines have something to grow on. That also is going to get divided. Now, who's supplying the posts? So both are supplying the posts. And the Gemara later on is going to point out this last line of the Mishnah is really an explanation of the previous line of the Mishnah, meaning the reason why they're dividing the posts is because they're both going to be supplying the posts. Okay, we'll see that when we get to the Gemara. That's coming up in just a moment. Tana, with the Gemara quotes the following brisa: Makom shenagu liksar ein rishay lakor, lakor ein rishay liksar. Ushne ma'akvin ze al ze. Okay, so the brisa tells us basically what we learned back in the Mishnah, but the brisa over here a little more detailed. Neither can change from the minhag. In other words, if the minhag is to be kotzer, to harvest, meaning to cut the grain, so then you can't uproot. And if the minhag is to uproot, then you can't harvest. In other words, everyone's got to follow the minhag. So, liksar in Rosh HaLakor. Now, the Gemara here is going to be even more detailed in terms of why it is that if the minhag is to harvest, to cut, so then you cannot uproot. And the Gemara now is going to point out that this can come from the protest of the owner and the sharecropper, or I should say the owner or the sharecropper. And the Gemara is going to go over arguments for each one. So, hi Amar, so now we're talking from the perspective of the owner. Be'ina detitzvan li'ara. So, I want the lower portion of the harvest to be used as fertilizer. So in other words, basically, look, I want ktsira. I want it to be cut. I don't want it to be uprooted. Why? Because I want those little stubs to be used as fertilizer for the next for the next harvest. The hayamar lo matzin la'akor. And now from the standpoint of the sharecropper, look, if the minhag is to harvest and not to uproot, so now the sharecropper can also make a very legitimate argument. Uprooting is really tough stuff. Meaning uprooting means that you're going to have to bend down and pick up every grain from its root. And I'm not in the position to do that. So if the prevailing minhag is to be kotzer, to harvest and not to uproot, so arguments can be made both from the owner and from the sharecropper that we're going to harvest and we're not going to uproot. And let's go the other direction. Ein rasha liksar. So I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. So there we go. So if the minhag is lakor, okay. So ein rashai liksor. So if the minhag is to uproot, so then we're not going to harvest. And again, the Gemara is going to go over arguments provided by both owner and sharecropper. We start with the owner. Hayam rabina titinaker arei. Look, I want to uproot because I want a clean field. I don't want anything left over. I don't want stubble left over from the previous harvest. I want a clean field. And v'hayam rabina tivna. And the sharecropper is going to say, yeah, good. And I want the tevin. I want the straw. So therefore, it's better for me. It's more advantageous for me to uproot because that's going to be more for me to take home. And I want that. So again, arguments that could be provided both by the owner and the sharecropper where the minhag is to uproot that we should specifically be uprooting and not harvesting. And both can prevent each other. So lamali. So the Gemara says, now that line of the Braisa seems to be superfluous. The Gemara says, no, it's not. Matam kamar. Gemara says that the last line of the Braisa is just simply providing explanation for the first lines of the Mishnah, the Braisa. Matam liksar in Rosh HaLakor, Lakor in Rosh HaLiksar, Mishum Dishne Makvin Zel Zeh. And it's exactly for this reason, because each one of them can provide an argument. Each argument stands by itself. So if the prevailing minhag is to uproot, so now neither party can by themselves say, hey, I want to change the minhag. The owner can't say that to the sharecropper. The sharecropper can't say that to the owner. Now, obviously, if they're mutually agreeable to changing from deviating from the minhag, that's fine. But in of themselves, neither can change the minhag without the permission of the other. If the minhag is to plow after harvesting, so then you have to plow after harvesting. Then the Gemara says Peshitta. Now, if that's the prevailing minhag, so then you have to follow the prevailing minhag. And basically what bothers the Gemara is, where's the Chiddush in the Mishnah? So lo tzricha ba'asra de lo menachshe. So the Gemara says, well, I can make the following argument. Let's talk about a community where we don't weed. In other words, we generally speaking, there of course, right, the grains and all the growth require a little bit of weeding, but the minhag is not to weed. And va'azal ihu benachish. Now the sharecropper comes and he works the field and he's weeding. And this is all prior to the harvest. So now basically what he did is he already took out all the bad growth. And now, so now, can't the sharecropper make the following argument to the owner? Look, The prevailing minhag around here is not to weed. And I did. And so now I harvested. So what is the whole purpose of plowing after harvesting? It's basically weeding. But I did that already. So I know the prevailing minhag in our community is to plow after harvesting, but I know the reason why, and it's no longer necessary. So kamash malandi by lelefrushalei. So the Gemara says, well, if this was not articulated prior to the agreement, so then you must plow after you harvest. Even though you could make an argument, the Gemara just did, even though you could make an argument of why I shouldn't be plowing after harvesting, but nevertheless, unless that is articulated, and the current minhag is that you must plow after harvesting, so you got to plow after harvesting. Hakol kaminhag medina, the Gemara continues, hakol asui amai. So the Gemara says, now the hakol of the Mishnah always tips us off that there's another chiddush embedded in the Mishnah, and the Gemara over here teases it out. Lasuya has the Tanur Rabban. The Gemara quotes the following brayso: Malkum shenagu lahaskir ilanos agabe karka. Let's say in part of the agreement between the worker and the owner, so there happens to be trees that are around the perimeter of the field. And Rashi points out over here, it's a stay ilan. Stay lavan. It's a wheat field. It's a grain field, but around the perimeter you have trees. Now, in terms of working a field with trees, so it's a pleasure. There's nothing to do. Again, I'm not talking from experience. I'm just saying it over like Rashi. This is not me knowing the farming industry. So there's nothing to do. The trees pretty much mind themselves, and the fruit pretty much grows by themselves. So as a sharecropper, it's really a bonus. When you have trees along the perimeter of the field, so the field itself requires a lot of work. You got to plow the field, you got to plant. There's a lot of work to be done on the wheat field. But on the trees that are around the perimeter, it's kind of like a bonus. So, Makum Shenagu Laskir, Lanos Agabe Karka Maskirin. Makum Sheinagu Laskir, Ein Maskirin. So, if the prevailing minhag is that the sharecropper is going to be able to help himself to the fruit, meaning as per sharecropping, meaning as per his percentage, so then great. And if the prevailing minhag is that you do not allow the sharecropper to take from the fruit of the tree, but he only is allowed to work the field and harvest the grain, but that's it, so then you don't allow the sharecropper to take from the fruit of the tree. Malkum Shana Lahaskir, the Gemara now is going to go over both of these points that we just learned in the Braisa. Malkum Shana Lahaskir Maskir and Pshita. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If the prevailing minhag is to allow the sharecropper to take from the fruit of the tree that's surrounding the wheat field, so then he's allowed to do so. To which the Gemara says, well, if that's the prevailing minhag, what new chiddush is there? So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha de kuleyama yave betilsa va'azil v'yave b'reviyam." So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the chiddush is. It goes like this. Let's say that the prevailing breakdown between owner and sharecropper is a third to two thirds. And as Rashi points out over here, the aris is going to get two-thirds, and the owner is going to get one-third. That's the general prevailing custom. And now, what happened in this particular scenario, and he says, you know, instead of taking a third, so I'm only going to take a quarter. Okay, so the owner basically now is reducing the amount of grain that he himself is going to collect, allowing the sharecropper to take more. And now, there could be an implicit agreement contained in the fact that he accepted for himself a lower percentage. Mao de tema de amar le. So can't we now make the argument that basically the owner is saying to the sharecropper, Hai de batzri lecha, adai de lo yavin alach b'ilanos. You notice that the general custom is that I only keep a third for myself, and now I'm only keeping a quarter for myself. And do you know why? It's because there are trees around the field, and I know our minhag is that you're entitled to fruit from the tree, but I reduced my percentage so that you don't take the fruit from the tree. And all this was not articulated, it was just simply implied in the reduction of the percentage. So kamash malandi by lefrushalei. And the Gemara says that this is not an acceptable tacit agreement. If you want to make such an agreement, it must be articulated. But if the prevailing minhag is to accept, is for the sharecropper to take the fruit from the tree, he's to do so, and you can't assume that a greater portion of the field is going to be in lieu of no fruit from the tree. And now basically we're going to do the same thing, but just in the other direction. If the prevailing minhag is that the sharecropper is not to take the fruit from the tree, so then he's not allowed to. To which the Gemara says pshita. Again, it's the same basic point. It's obvious. All we're doing is just simply following the minhag of the makom. And what do I need a mishnah to teach me? So the Gemara says tzricha dekolei ama mekable berivia vazuil vekible betilsa. And once again, we're going to do the same thing over here. That the prevailing custom is that the owner of the property is going to be accepting only a quarter for himself, leaving three quarters for the sharecropper. And here the owner said, look, I'll let you sharecrop, but I'm taking a third, giving you only two thirds, which is less than what is normal, the normal rate. So here we can basically now make the same argument in the other direction. You know, the sharecropper now says to the owner, you know, I'm taking a little bit less. I assume it's because I'm allowed to take the fruit from the tree, and I know our prevailing minhag is not to take, but look, I'm taking less as a sharecropper, so that must be in lieu of the fact that I'm going to be entitled to fruit the tree. So kamash blandi by lele frushale, and again, such a tacit agreement is not to be assumed, and unless it was articulated between the owner and the sharecropper, we do not assume that such a agreement was binding. Kishem shecholkem b'tefila kach cholkem b'tevin avakash. Next part of the Mishnah. Just like you divide the grain, so too you divide the straw as well. So I'm Rav Yosef b'Bavel nehigi d'lo yavitivna la'risa. So Rav Yosef points out, do you know that the prevailing minhag in Bavel is that we don't give to the sharecropper the tevin, we don't give him the straw. Okay, so Rav Yosef is telling us what the accepted minhag is in Bavel. L'may nafkimina, the Gemara points out now, Rav Yosef, what point was he trying to make? The Gemara says, the Iika, Inish Yave. So let's say you do have a landowner who hires a sharecropper and he does allow for a distribution of the straw. So Ayin Yafehu. That is just simply the owner being generous. Velo Garmin Amine. But he is not going to be setting the custom. So again, just an interesting discussion of how customs are set, how customs are prevailing, who drives the customs, can an individual change a custom, and again,
it shows you that you don't need all the rules, because as long as the landowner sets the rules, doesn't make a difference with the customs.
The customs are the default settings. So the customs are, if we don't negotiate anything, so then we have to follow the customs. But if there is an explicit agreement between the two, so then you follow that. I'm Rav Yosef Bukhra Vitavcha Arkavta. Again, Rav Yosef now was just talking about some basic responsibilities between the owner and the sharecropper. Again, you're going to have a lot of this kind of discussion in our perek, because obviously you basically have a partnership over the land. And who's responsible for what? And I'm sure even after all these Gemaras, I'm sure there's going to be room to disagree. But that's what the Gemara here is addressing. So Rav Yosef says that Burcha v'tapsa v'arkafta, these are the three layers that create the perimeter around the field. Rashi points out Burcha from the word Bechor, that's the first layer. Tafata from the word Tafi, which means to add on a little bit more, that's the second layer. And Arkafta means to ride on top of it. So that's the third layer. So basically, when you create a perimeter around the field, so there are three layers, one on top of the other, Vikani de Chizri, and the fencing, and the thorns, the Balabayas, all that is going to have to be supplied by the Balabayas. So the owner of the field is the one responsible to create the perimeter around the field in order to create some sort of security for the field. Now, as far as the actual thorns themselves, in order to insulate the fence and to provide even more protection for the fence, so that has to be provided by the sharecropper and Klal de Milsa. And the Gemara says, and I'll give you the general way to understand this, call Iker Balma. It's a strange word. You'll see on the side. You know, you see a strange word like that. So, you know, you see the Gemara on the side. Try to explain it. But Rashi says that the word Balma over here means Iker Shmira. In other words, in terms of the base level protection for the field, so then the balabais, that is on the, that's the responsibility of the owner of the property. And it's yirasa yaserasa, but anytime you go above base level protection, darisa, so that is the responsibility of the sharecropper. The amar of Yosef, and one more of this division of responsibility between the owner and the sharecropper, mara vizavila, the hoe and the shovel, vidava vizarnuka, the bucket and leather pouch, leather bottle, the balabais, that all is the responsibility of the owner. And then, Arisa Bay Avid Bay Yure. In terms of the irrigation ditches and who's responsible for digging out the irrigation ditches, so that's the responsibility of the sharecropper. Kishem Shechokin Miyan Chokin Bizmur Tzvikanim. So the Gemara says, in terms of the division of a vineyard, so the sharecropper is going to be dividing not only the grapes, but also the vines and also the posts in which the vines are going to be resting on. So Kanimai Vidatayo. So the Gemara says, what are the posts doing in terms of the Mishnah? Amid Debe Rav Yanai Kanim Hamuchulakim Shebehem Shebehem Ma'amidim Esekafanim. We're talking about the posts where the vines are resting on top of, like we described. Ushne Mesapkin Esekanim. Now, who's providing the posts? So that's both the owner and the sharecropper, meaning they're going to have a shared responsibility of providing the posts. So the Gemara wants to know, what is that doing over there in the Mishnah? So the Gemara's explanation, Matam Kamar, yeah, that's what's doing over there in the Mishnah, is it's explaining the Mishnah. Matam Shneim Cholkim Bekanim, why is it that the owner and the sharecropper are dividing the posts? As Mishum Dishneim Esapkim Esekanim, because they're both supplying the posts. So therefore, at the end of the day, the posts are not the growth that comes from the field. The posts are part of the equipment necessary in order to create the vineyard. But because they're both supplying it, so therefore they're both going to be dividing it after the job is done. Okay, so Adkan, that's the first Mishnah of the ninth parak. Mishnah number two. Okay, as I promoted, the first two Mishnahs of this parak is for both a socher and a chocher. And then after that, then it's singular. It only applies to one or the other. Hamakabas.
Yeah, but the vineyard, you don't really remove. All you remove is the grapes. The vineyard stays there for next year.
Again, I have to trust you.
No, I know that.
I mean, I did visit. I did visit a vineyard, but.
Okay. The branches stay there. Right. Just wait for next year to close. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what they're dividing.
Okay.
Between the vines.
Okay. Hamikabel sadem mechavero v'hi beis hashlachim. Now, if you are accepting upon yourself to work a property, and v'hi beis hashlachim, now it is a field that requires irrigation. Okay. Now, if you remember the beginning of Moed Katan, which I know is a long time ago, but if you remember the beginning of Moed Katan, so the Gemara over there talked about the Beis Abal, the Beis HaShlachim, right? Two different types of fields, fields that just need rainwater and fields that need irrigation. There, Beis HaShlachim almost comes out like a negative. Like it's a kind of field where like it needs extra work. And so the reason why it comes up over there in the beginning of Moed Katan is because the Gemara over there talks about which is subject to Hefsed, which requires my attention even during Chol HaMoed, etc., etc. In our Mishnah, again, we're not talking about Chol HaMoed, we're just talking about a basic agreement between the owner and the sharecropper. Beis HaShlachim is kind of like a bonus. Bonus in what sense? Take a look at the Rashi on the Mishnah. So, Beis HaShlachim, Karki Yavesha, Delo Yada B'meg Shamim, Umayan Sheba Mashka Osa. So, it happens to have self-supplying water source, meaning it's a dry field, the rain is not enough for it, but in this particular case, it's got its own water source. So now when you're a sharecropper appraising the land and seeing like what kind of work am I doing over here? Oh, bonus. And in other words, it's got its own water source. Okay, that's awesome. And you'll see where we're going with this. So Makabas Adam Mechaver Vihi Beis HaShlachim Beis HaYilan. So, or it's a field with trees on it. And as we pointed out, a field with trees on it, another bonus. Because you don't have to do that much. In fact, take a look at the Rashi, the next Rashi in the Mishnah. Uvishvil Ha'ilan Ha'u Chaviva Al Ha'aris. The sharecropper is loving the perspective of having to work such a field. Shinoto Chelik Beperes Below Torach. Because what am I doing? Not a whole lot. The trees are there. Trees don't need much tending to. I'm going to just basically pick the fruit and we're going to divide it. And this is a pretty good sharecropping deal. Okay, much better than the harvesting of the wheat and the barley, where you got to plow, plant, harvest, etc., etc., this is much easier. So, and in both of these circumstances of the Mishnah, where the field has its own water source, or you're talking about an orchard, Yavisha Mayan v'niksa tzayilan. Now, in these two circumstances, let's say after you've taken on the responsibility of working this particular field, the water dries up, or the fruit tree gets cut down. And now, although you thought this was going to be easy work, now your work just got a lot harder. Because now you have to manually irrigate the field. You now have to plant in a place where the tree once was. So, eino menakal min chakuro. So now, says the Mishnah, you don't get a chance to deduct. Meaning, even though this isn't exactly as it was presented to you, but to no fault of the owner of the property. The owner of the property didn't do anything, right? These are natural catastrophes. Right, and so therefore, it's your mazel, and you're still bound by all the responsibilities, and you are going to, it's not going to be any kind of deduction from the agreement. Now, im amar lo chakur li sada beis hashlachim, zu, o sada beis ha'ilan zeh. Now, if the agreement was made very clearly, where I said beis hashlachim zeh, in other words, we're pointing to this as self-irrigating field, or stay based at Ilan Zeh. I point to this field as an orchard, a tree field. So then, Yavesh Amayam Nixas Elam Menakolam and Chakura. Meaning, if part of the very definition of the field is that it has its own water source, or it's got trees, and this was part of the deal, so now, in the absence of water, in the absence of trees, now the worker can actually deduct that off the amount that he has to pay the owner of the property. Hey, Chidam, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Our Mishnah's talking about natural disasters. And in our Mishnah, we basically said to the sharecropper, it's unfortunate, isn't it, that that something happened that was not within your control, not within the owner's control, but you're going to have to suffer the loss, we say to the sharecropper. So the Gemara says, Hechidam, Ilem Adiyavish Nare Rabba, Amai Eino Menakalo Men Chakuro. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. When I described the Mishnah, I called it a natural disaster. So the Gemara is now saying, if we're really talking about a natural disaster, and not just a natural disaster, but like a major natural disaster, the main water source dried up. So in other words, we're not talking about that one little furrow of water providing irrigation for this field, but basically there's no water for anybody. The main water source for the city dried up. So the Gemara says, Neimalei, can't the sharecropper now turn to the owner of the field and say, Makas medina hi, meaning you got to cut me a break. There's no way I was expected to produce this kind of crop in these kind of circumstances. So you must understand, like there should be some sort of deduction off the sharecropping agreement under these circumstances. And the Gemara doesn't balk, meaning the Gemara says that it obviously is a legitimate argument that can be given from the sharecropper to the owner. So Amra Papa, so Papa says, you're right. Under those circumstances, yes, the sharecropper can demand a reduction. So the Gemara says, the Yavish Nahara Zuto. Our Mishnah is talking about a very specific circumstance where it is only the water source going to this particular field that dried up. Now the Amrlei, where now the owner can say to the sharecropper, Yibayalach Lasu Yibidavla. Well, it's unfortunate now, but you still have within the power to irrigate the field. You're just going to have to work a little bit harder. You're going to have to go take a bucket and basically get from the main water source into our field. Yes, the field, when presented to you, had that little extra convenience where there already was a natural water source for the field, but that little convenience dried up, but there's still general water around, and you're just going to have to work a little bit harder. And that, we could say, is the mazel of the sharecropper, and he's going to have to suffer that loss. Amr of Papa, top of Kufdalad Amr Aleph Hani Tarti Masisa Kamaisa. So as far as the first two Mishnayos are concerned, so Mishkachala Bein Bechachrunasa Bein Bekablanusa. So it applies both to Chakiris and to Arisas. Right, I already promoted this line of Rav Papa in the beginning of the Perek, but here it is. Rav Papa says that Mishnayos 1 and 2 apply to both to sharecropping and to a fixed rental agreement. agreement between the two. The word chakira nusa is a reference to fixed, and kapla nusa is a reference to sharecropping, right? What we would call also arisas. Now, as Tosus points out over here, not everything in Mishnayos 1 and 2 is for both, right? We talked in the first Mishnah about the splitting, the sharing of the grapes and the vines and the posts. So that's only by Arisas. So Tosus acknowledges that, and Tosus says, okay, but primarily, certainly the first part of the first Mishnah is talking about both. And Rav Papa was talking in larger terms. But you're right, says Tosfos. There is a detail in the first Mishnah that applies only to Arisas. But Mikan Ve'elach, but from this point going forward in the Mishnayos, the Isa Bekablanusa, Leisa Bechachronusa, and the Isa Bechachronusa, Leisa Bekablanusa. So in the Mishnayos coming up ahead, meaning you see the Mishnah coming up in the right in the middle of this Amud, so then it's going to be mutually exclusive. It's either going to be Arisas or it's going to be Kablanus. Sorry. It's either going to be Arisas or it's going to be Chakirus, but it's not going to be both. And obviously, our job is going to be, as we go through each Mishnah, from this point going forward in the Mishnah, is to identify which one's talking about, and most of the time, it's going to be self-evident. Okay. The second part of the Mishnah told us that if the owner promoted the field as being a self-irrigating field, and then the water dries up, so then the sharecropper says, wait one second, that's not how it was promoted to me, and therefore, legitimately, the sharecropper can make a deduction, and he can't just simply say, well, or the owner can't simply say, I'm sorry, it's your tough luck. Now, Va'amai, the Gemara says, on this point in terms of promotion, lema lay, so why can't the owner say to the sharecropper, Shema be'alma amri lach? I know I called it a self-irrigating field, but that's what people call it. Meaning, it's not a definition, it's just simply a name in which people call it. And Milo Tanya in the Gemara says, now let's consider the following. It's an interesting brisa, in which we're basically going to make the following argument. Sometimes, a name is not necessarily a definition. A name is just simply what we call things. And just because when I'm promoting something and I'm calling it by a given name, that doesn't necessarily define the item. Now, I know, in other words, we have a general idea of Mekachtos, of Geneva's Das. In other words, obviously, when promoting, you obviously have to promote something accurately. But there is also room in Halacha where we can make this argument that it's just a name.
Yeah, but he said Zed.
You're ahead, meaning we're going to catch up to you in just a moment. The Gemara is going to catch up to you. But, okay, that's an excellent point. Okay. Ha'omer l'chavero, base kor offer ani mochelach. So the Gemara quotes now the following brisa, and the brisa over here is going to give a number of examples where we're going to have this idea of a name is just sometimes a name, and it's not the definition. So let's say, for example, ha'omer l'chavero, base kor offer ani mochelach. I'm selling you base kor offer. Now, base kor is a volume. And it speaks to a certain parcel of land. Now, I know volume and parcel are not the same. Volume is three dimensions, parcel is two dimensions. But, you know, you've been around long enough, you'll know that sometimes they refer to an area by the volume of seeds that it takes. Anyway, but base core. Okay, so that's referring to a particular area of land. So, and he says, base core, afar ni mochalach, afa pishem bo el alasach. Now, let's say the field is only alasach, which is half of a core. He gio. So the sale is still going to be a valid sale. Shalom machalom ala shema. V'hu dimitkari beit kor. So the Gemara says it's just a name. But the Gemara says, this is all part of the Brisa. But the Brisa says, this is only going to be a fair argument if actually everyone refers to it as beit kor. Meaning that happens to be its name. But it doesn't define its volume. I'll give you another example, says the Brisa. Karma ni mochalach afa pishe'en bo gefanim. Let's say I sell you karma. Okay, in other words, that's what we're all calling it. Now, the word kerem is a vineyard. And I'm selling you a karma. And then you get there to the field and, lo and behold, there's no vines. There's no grapes. So higiyo. Sale still going to be a valid sale. Shalom machalo el shema. Shalom machalo el shema v'hu dimitkari karma. So the Gemara says it's just a name. Meaning, we all call it a karma. But it doesn't define what it is. But again, the Brisa points out, but that has to be legitimate, meaning everybody calls it karma, right? If I can give an example, it's like the yeshiva Karen B'Yavneh, right? Is there a vineyard over there? No, there's no vineyard over there. There used to be. I know. I know. But in other words, just it's a name that we all call it, and it doesn't necessarily define what it is. But again, this is only going to be legitimate if that's what people call it. I'll give you another example, says the Braisa. Pardes ani mochalach, I'm going to sell you an orchard. Now, the word pardes is generally attached to a orchard of pomegranates. So I'm going to sell you a pardes. Alpha pishem bo rimonim igio. Now, there are no pomegranates. You get to the field, right? You just bought this pardes, and you're looking for the orchard, you're looking for the pomegranates, and you find none. Shalom machalo el shema. That's the name. But again, v'hu dimitkari pardesa. But again, it's got to be called the pardes. So, we find the Braisa give three different examples that if you have a field that goes by a particular name and everybody calls it by that name, so it doesn't necessarily have to define the field. So now when you have a sharecropper who's working a particular land and the owner said to him, you know, it's a beis hashlachim, right? The water source is a built-in water source. So doesn't necessarily mean it has to have a beis hashlachim. Can't we use the rules that we just learned together in the Braisa? Alma, and again, the Gemara just kind of spells everything out. Alma amar le shma ba amar amilach. Hachanami name le shma ba amar amilach. So just like in the Braisa, that's what the name it goes by, and that's a legitimate argument. Over here, why can't the owner say to the sharecropper, that's the name it goes by, and why can't we say the same thing over here? So the Gemara is going to have two approaches. Amar shmol lo kasha, ha da amar le machkir le choker, ha da amar le choker le machkir. So the Gemara says, well, one distinction we can make, this is Shmuel's answer, is it really depends on who's talking to whom. Is the owner talking to the worker, or is the worker talking to the owner? So amale machia lachoker. So if the owner's talking to the worker, so shema ba'ama. Amarle. So then it's just a name. In other words, the owner says, this is the name of my field. And, okay, it's a, I know, it may be a little bit misleading, but this is what I call it. This is what everyone calls it. It's understood. Now, Amarle chokel amachir kpeda. But if the worker says to the owner, I'm going to work the field, right, assuming it's a beis hashlachim, assuming that it has its own water source. Under those circumstances, so then when the worker is saying that to the owner as part of the agreement, obviously the worker has in mind what he needs to do, how hard he needs to work, and obviously under those circumstances, clearly the water source is more than just a name. It has to be there, and if it's not there, so then a legitimate deduction can be made from the yield. I'll assume that it's in writing, but in other words, I put it in writing only just simply for purposes of you know, in the event that there's a dispute afterwards.
Take a look at it. Can you say, oh, he told me it was a father's.
Right.
And all the should go there and
yes.
Take a look.
100%.
You don't buy without
Right, right. Or accept a sharecropping agreement. Yeah, agreed.
No, right.
Right. Ravina Amar Idividi Damale Machil Choker. So, and Ravina gives a second answer and he says, no, really the truth of the matter is that the owner's talking to the worker. And Midikamar Zeh. And this is what you picked up on earlier. But over here, if you read the Mishnah carefully, you'll see that the word Zeh is used. Now, whenever you see the word Zeh, it's true in the Torah, right? You'll see Rashi every time. Zeh keli vanveil. Hachodesh hazeh lachem. Right? You see in the Torah where you see the word Zeh, it's something very specific, meaning it's something that we are looking at. So, so it means that we're actually on the field itself. So this negotiation between the owner and the worker is not taking place in some sort of office, off campus, off site. We are on site. And we're now looking at the field. And the word Zeh is a tip-off that we're looking at the field. So, Beis HaShlachim Lamele, Lamemar. So, and now, when I'm using the word Beis HaShlachim, we're obviously no longer naming the field. Because we're here right on the field. So Beis HaShlachim now becomes part and parcel, the deal between the owner and the worker. And the worker and the owner. And now it is clearly understood that when we are in the field and describing this Beis HaShlachim, it is now understood that this is part of the agreement. That the worker understands that he wants a self irrigating field, and the board beis hashlachim, while we're on the field, tips us off, and once the water dries up, so then the worker can put a deduction. Okay, good. All right. Now, next Mishnah. We're in Kuf Dalam and Aleph, right in the middle of the Mishnah. Mekabel sada mechavero v'ho v'ra. So you accept a field from your friend, and you're going to work the field, and you're going to share crop. And the year goes by, the season goes by, and you did nothing. So now think about the owner and what kind of taina he has against you. Meaning, that was an entire season I just lost. And look, we are sharecropping. Now remember, from this point going forward in the Mishnayos in the ninth parak, so it's either sharecropping or it's tenancy. So, meaning a fixed amount. And if you take a look at Rashi, the second Rashi, right? Kigon bekablana, shekabel lamechzer l'shisha l'revia. So we are talking here about sharecropping, where it's a percentage. You see, if it's a fixed amount, so then the owner is going to get his fixed amount, what, regardless of whatever the worker does. Works the field, doesn't work the field, you are leasing my field for a fixed amount, you're paying it to me regardless. So this Mishnah is clearly not talking about Cholcher, it's talking about Kabbalah, it's talking about Arisus. Good. So, and again,
it's a loss by not working at all. So, you know, sometimes if you don't work good, maybe the land gets worse.
Could be. Yeah. Again, I'm not an agricultural.
Isn't the rent contingent on the production, or is it? Good, is it? Yeah. Because this is.
Just one second. So the Mishnah is talking about a resource, and the Mishnah is teaching us the following: that if the sharecropper does not work the land, now the owner has a legitimate claim against the sharecropper. In other words, that was opportunity lost, significant opportunity lost. And so now, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to pay me because you agreed to work the land. I assumed there was going to be yield, and your incentive obviously is that you were going to share in the percentage. And now we are going to share in the percentage. And now I got nothing, and you got nothing. But more importantly to me, I got nothing. So what happens? So the Mishnah tells us what happens. Shaman oso kama ruuya lasos venosin lo. And so basically, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to come to some sort of estimation of how much the land was going to produce, and that is what the sharecropper is going to have to pay the owner. Shekach kosev lo. In fact, and by the way, this goes back to your question of whether this is oral or written. Shekach kosev lo. This is part of the written agreement. Im ovir velo aavid ashalem bit meitava. If I let the land lay fallow and I don't work the land, so I'm going to have to pay you meitava, a very fair appraisal of what the land could have produced, and your percentage of that. Okay, so
it's written.
brings us to the Gemara, which we're going to get to in just a moment. Okay, so good. So we have now a Mishnah that is talking specifically about arisos, not about chakiros, and that is in the case of sharecropping, where your profit and the owner's profit is basically going to be all contingent on that which is produced, and you don't produce, so then you're going to have to pay him. If you remember, we had something similar to this back a little bit earlier, where basically, what are we talking about? Contingency. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're right, we just had Rabbi Neuberger here over Shabbos, and he spoke about contingency. Now, you know what contingency really is? It's another way to describe asmachta. Right, so over here, let's make the argument that this is a form of asmachta, where basically we're talking about a contingency. But over here, however, and we had a very similar Gemara earlier, also related to this, where the sharecropper also made some sort of contingency. If I don't work the land, so I'm going to pay you alpha zuz, I'm going to pay you 1,000 zuz. Over the difference, of course, and over here, this is not a smachta, and it's not a contingency, is that over here, what the worker is going to be due to the owner is really going to be a fair appraisal of a real loss. So unlike previously, where there was some sort of hyperbole, some sort of exaggeration of what is going to be paid in the event of failure of working, over here, we're talking about a real fair expectation. Okay. We start with the Gemara. Rameir Hayadoresh Lashon Hejot. Rameir would be Doresh Lashon Hejot. What does that mean? Well, get used to it because we're going to see this again and again. And that is as follows. There are certain contracts that are written up, and it's basically going to speak to what the halacha is. Even though the Chachamim didn't necessarily institute it, but the language of the contracts really do speak to an idea, an understanding. Look at the first Rashi in the Gemara. Dorish Lashon Hejot, Rashi writes, Sheher gilu hajotos lichtov, shalokitanakanas chachamim, this is how people basically wrote up contracts, regular people, laymen, and the hayadorish halashon, lifsok hadin acharav. And as far as Rameir is concerned, it's not just limited to Rameir. We're going to see this as we go through the Gemara with Rabbi Yehuda, with Hillel HaZaken, with Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, with Rabbi Yossi. It's going to be a litany of Tanayim, who basically look at contracts and basically say, these contracts speak to halacha. In other words, it's almost kind of like a built-in understanding that people have regarding the halacha that manifests itself in how the contracts are written up. And so therefore, when you carefully read the contract, you'll see halachas basically embedded within the contracts. We're going to see a number of examples. So, Rameir HaYadorish Lashon Hejot D'Tanya, Rameir Omer, Im Ovir V'lo Avir Ashlem Be'metava. Now, we already know that language of the contract because that's our Mishnah. And basically now, this addresses your question that you asked earlier, meaning it's Pasha. Basically, what we're now learning is that really the language of the contract is really what's driving the halacha. Meaning that we're learning the halacha based on Lashon Hejot, the way that laymen draw up the contract. Okay, give you another example. Rabbi Yehuda Yadorish Lashon Hejot D'Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Adam may be karban ashir al ishto, v'chein kol karban v'karban shehi chayeves, shekach kosev lo. So if you read a ksuva, and we're going to do that in just a moment. In other words, we're going to get to the key line in just a moment. But when you read a ksuva, you're going to see that when a husband marries a woman, so she's going to basically live his lifestyle. If he's rich, she gets to live the rich lifestyle. Included in the rich lifestyle is going to be that she owes karbanos. And let's say that the karbanos were already past due, meaning previous conditions, if you will. She came into the marriage owing a karban for something that she was obligated for. Let's say she was a Zav Gadola, and she had to bring a carbon for that. So we know that the carbon is going to be based on her economic status. And now that she's married, and even though the Chiyuv came from a precondition prior to the marriage, the husband is going to now have to pay for her carbon and based on his financial status. And the language of the ksuva is, here we go. And the point is going to be the same again and again. Contracts that were written up by laymen. Now, I know the ksuva, it's funny, you could argue that the ksuva is not a layman contract, right? Say, it's rabbinic. But my guess is, and I'm saying this now not from knowledge, but my guess is that there's a certain flexibility in terms of what is written into the ksuva, and there basically is a little bit of poetic license, if you will, in terms of certain lines that could be written to the ksuva. So I think, again, I'm not saying this definitively, but I think that's what is meant over here when the Gemara describes it as a Lashon Hejot. Achrayis de'yislach alai, any obligations that you have, so min kadamat dana, so that's going to come from me, meaning I'm going to pay all your obligations, and included in that is going to be the karbanos that you already owe. Hello, Zakanai Yadorish Lashon Hejot. Here's the third example. Detanya the Gemara quotes the Brisa on Alexandria. I am Mekachin Ethnoshosayim. So the men of Alexandria would be Mekach their wives. Now, Kiddushin, that's serious stuff. That's the first stage of marriage. And then, Vishas Knisos on the Chuppah, and right before the marriage, so what happens? So, Bainachrein, Vichotzim Osam. So other men come and snatch them, and take them away, and marry them after they were already Mekudeshes to another man. So So basically we're looking at mamzeres, aren't we? Meaning here are women who are already married, kiddushin with one man, and then get taken up by other men and marry them. But that's not marriage. Meaning the second man, it's ish. So it's mamzerus. So Amalem Hilazak and Evil Ksuva Simchem. So Hilazakin says, well, let me take a look at the Ksuva. And Evio Lo Ksuva Simanu Matsushikasabam. And here is what was written in the Ksuva, the language of the Ksuva. Lechetikansi Lechupa Have Lila into. Really the Ketuva was written on condition. Amenas. And so, like we learned, a number of cases in the Mishnayos and Kedushin, when you write Amenas, so the Kedushin is going to be contingent. It's going to be conditional. And if the condition is not met, so then retroactively the Kedushin is no good. V'lo asu b'nei mamzerim. And so after Hillel Zaken read the Ksuva, so he spared the children from being mamzerim because the Kedushin was actually conditional.
It's written Almanas. Why isn't the negative condition stated that if you don't, then it's not? I mean, that's
could be that was included. Could be it's not needed. Okay.
So if she's Lizana, she doesn't get Misa, gets nothing.
No, she wasn't Mazana. She wasn't Mazana. In other words, the Kedushin was only Almanas. The condition wasn't met.
Right.
Okay. So
she was taken by force.
Whatever. Okay. Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha Yador Shloshan Hedjo D'Tanya. Here comes another example, a fourth example. Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha Omer Amavet Chaver Lo Yimsha Kenenenu Yoser Mechovo. Now, when you're Mamashkin, in other words, you're taking now a collateral. There was a default of the loan. You go over now to the borrower and you say to the borrower, what's going on over here? Give me a mashkon so that I know that I'll have security for my loan. So you should not take a security that is going to be greater in value than the loan amount. Chicago Sivlo. And how do I know this? It's part of the contract. And again, a fourth example of where you see the contract really speaks to the really speaks to the halacha. Tashlamasa, this is the language of the contract. Tashlamasa de islach alai kol kabel dichi. The kablanasa, the payment that you get from me is going to be commensurate to the amount that I take from you. Meaning that whatever mashkan I take from you is not going to be exceed, it's not going to be greater than the value. Now, time is the cost of lehachi, ha'i lo cost of lehachi, lo kanya. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. You're taking a mashkan from the borrower because he defaulted on the loan. And when taking a mashkan from the borrower, you're also writing a contract on the mashkan. Gemara says, you really have to write a contract on the mashkon? Just take the mashkon. And whatever its value is, that's what its value is. And I don't understand, what did the contract add to the whole discussion? We know the halach is that if you take a mashkon and you return the mashkon to him, and with the Bryce over here is describing, Rav Yochanan over here is describing where we know the Torah says that if it's somebody poor and they need their mashkon at night, so you have to return it to them at night. But effectively, it's your mashkon, right? And you're just being a nice guy. The Torah describes it as tzedakah tiyelo. In other words, it's nice that you're giving it back to him, you know, when he needs it, but still, it's your mashkon. And furthermore, you gave him the mashkon, he used it, and then he died. So then, shomto me'al gabe banav. Now you go over to the children and say, okay, that's my mashkon. Meaning, your father borrowed money from me, he defaulted from the loan, I then took a mashkon, and now it's mine, so I get to keep the mashkon. So the Gemara is just bothered by what exactly is this contract adding now to the mashkon, where the mashkon by itself really is security for the loan. Answers the Gemara, top of Kuftal Amid Beis, Anik Siva L'Giron. No, it helps for the following circumstance. Let's say the mashkon goes down in value. So, under those circumstances, it could very well be that now if all you have is just the mashkon, that's all you get. And even though it's not loan to value, it does not, now the mashkon is no longer commensurate to the loan amount. But look, I'm really sorry. What the contract now does is that ensures that either you're going to keep the mashkon at its current value, or if it diminishes in value, you will then be able to go back to the borrower and recoup whatever difference it is between now its depreciated value and the actual loan amount. That's why the contract helps you. And again, the language of the contract is telling us that whatever collateral you take should not exceed the loan value. Okay, that was a fourth example. Tomorrow we'll start with the fifth example of this idea that contracts written by laymen sometimes speak to basic halacha.